Good afternoon. We're going to go ahead and get started. My name is Mike Snelly from Oklahoma State University, and I'll serve as moderator today and also will give one of the lectures today. So we're going to try to do a new twist on this whole issue of invasive plants today, and we're going to look at actually native plants that on occasion, under the right circumstances or conditions, can become problematic, if not fully blown invasive, given your conditions and what geographic area you might reside in the U.S. And so, besides that, while non-natives, I can speak at least for Oklahoma and surrounding areas where I work and live, the non-natives by far are still the real culprits. But because they're beyond the scope of today's talk and purpose, we're going to talk about plants that are problematic or at least bear watching that are on the watch list. And that's really what I'm going to show in my slides here in a few minutes. Because I'm an extension specialist and I work with the commercial greenhouse and nursery industry, I hear time and time again, and it really hurts me to hear consumers bash my growers when they dare to grow non-native plants, because 90% of their arguments are irrational, no science behind them, et cetera, et cetera. I know I just chaired a native plants workshop, and I did it sincerely because I knew it was exciting to a lot of my people, so to speak. But some of the comments I got at the end of that workshop really scared me on where people stand with non-natives. So the bottom line is I think there's still a lot of room to educate people that by and far most of our non-natives are safe, and certainly a lot of our natives are as well. But nevertheless, we can't judge a plant just based on where it was born. We have to look at them on a plant-by-plant basis. So some of our non-natives, while more problematic, some of our American species, I should say, can be invasive on occasion. So let me jump into a few thoughts I have. And I want to talk about the Great Plains only because that's where I've worked and lived throughout my life and includes mainly most of the state of Oklahoma. And Eastern Red Cedar, that's really the only native plant that we get our feathers ruffled over where I live. And so it's the most extreme description of an example of a plant, I should say, that really is beyond problematic. It is beyond that. We need to do something about it. It grows well, but given that we're afraid to set fires anymore and some other problems, it comes down to often disturbances or lack thereof. In this case, fire, it's now out of control. So having grown up with Juniperus virginiana, it was not a problem in my youth, but now in the last 20 years, it's somewhat out of control. But there is some good news with this plant. There's always a solution to most of these plants. You usually don't have to ban them altogether. You just have to find compromise or something where you can still have your cake and eat it too, so to speak. And so, again, I alluded to the challenges. It's rampant growth and reproductive success over the last 20 to 25 years due to the fire suppression, perhaps other phenomena that have fostered this unrestrained spread. And the bottom line of the solution for Eastern Red Cedar is it's a dioecious plant. So it's not that difficult. We already have male cultivars in the industry. I think the worst case scenario, if we were forced to, and perhaps we should do this voluntarily, because we're not at that point yet, we could go with just strictly male Eastern Red Cedars and life would be good again. It's not going to go anywhere without a partner, so to speak. They're already commercially available. And even some of our female cultivars, I will say in their defense, they don't have as many fruits or cones as oftentimes the wild counterparts or females in the wilds of Oklahoma and surrounding states. So I'm not ready to get rid of the females by any stretch of the imagination, but I am willing to meet some of my critics halfway and say, okay, we probably ought to be doing the lion's share of our Eastern Red Cedars with male cultivars and male cultivars alone, perhaps. That's probably the worst case scenario. And I'm just throwing out ideas of plants that, while are still legal to grow, they're basically on a watch list here in our country. Another one that I will confess that I'm not struggling with on a personal level, but I am watching and I'm more concerned about what I'm reading and hearing other people talk about is our native snail vine, Costulus. It's kind of like Eastern Red Cedar, only it's obviously a vine, and it's very prolific in its reproductive rate, unfortunately. And yes, it's indigenous, and yes, it has beautiful red fruits, but it can be a problem child if left unchecked. So it's at the very least weedy, if not invasive. But it's kind of, here's the irony of this. So I was talking about having 165 people that think life can't or can only center around native plant materials. If you talk to them about costulus, just the fact that it was born in the United States, it's off the table to discuss. It's just there's no way that it could be out of control because it's from the United States and not from Asia and elsewhere. So again, we have to look at these plants on a case-by-case basis. But in this case, our native costulus has proven to starting to spread more rampantly, primarily by birds and then perhaps other means as well. Solutions for this aren't as clear in my mind, so I'm kind of the messenger here, just showing this is one that we have on our watch list and that we're scratching our heads what we might do with it. It's profitable. It's got beautiful fruits, undeniably a beautiful vine. And we're not in Hawaii. We're in Oklahoma. So when we can get something pretty, we're going to go for it. Because I'm just being honest with you. And I'm not saying that to trash my state. I love Oklahoma, particularly since I'm being taped. But I'm serious though here, though. It is a beautiful vine. I will, give this up kicking and screaming. There's got to be a way to find compromise with our critics. Male selections, while they could be sought after or nearly fruitless, you're almost defeating the purpose of growing snail vine. It's grown for those beautiful fruits that give us winter beauty when we desperately need something to hang on to psychologically when we're having, ice events and snow events and all those things that befall us in Oklahoma and surrounding regions. So we want fruiting plants, and that's another battle for another day where I'm having critics say, Mike, you should only be growing non-fruiting or male plants. Well, I beg to disagree on that. There's a reason why we have fruiting plants, and it's for us. It's for aesthetic fulfillment or satisfaction. Let me go back for just a minute. So this is one that, while I don't have a good solution, I'm acknowledging that it is one that is starting to spread worse. It's one to watch, and it's one to scratch your heads thinking, where might this go in the long run? Rough-leaf dogwood. This is an ornamental shrub, usually a small tree, that honestly is nothing to write home about. It's one of our less attractive ornamental trees that are indigenous to Oklahoma relative to some of the other dogwoods, but nevertheless, it's indigenous, and it is spreading rapidly. It's about a 5 to 20-foot tree. It's quite variable in its habit. Almost always ends up being tree-like, occasionally shrub-like. But speaking from experience and observation and talking to growers and retailers alike, this plant, once it gets established, not only does it spread in terms of thickets, which thickets in themselves are not an invasive plant in my mind, it's more importantly those beautiful white irresistible fruits are picked up by birds and readily picked up by birds and then spread all over the country, so to speak. So while it's an observation to me, I will say when I started to research this, a lot of people had already beat me to the punch and started to sound the alarm about used to be called Cornus drummondii. I know it has quite a long fancy name, but rough-leaf dogwood. Let me get to a couple thoughts I have about this. I have quite a bit of experience with this, not only Oklahoma dogwood, but beyond Oklahoma. While it's sold sometimes for wildscape and other areas requiring a very durable, tenacious plant that can take weather extremes, it can take moisture extremes, et cetera, it is replaceable. There are probably other dogwoods, both native and non-native, that we could substitute very readily and solve the problem. If you recall me saying earlier, if you're not familiar with this particular species, it's not one of our showier dogwoods. However, I'm stubborn enough, I would love to hang on to it, if nothing else, for people in their wildscapes, and we're getting ready to do a xeriscaping talk down in southern Oklahoma, and this is one that's, it's going to be the last one to go. It's going to be right there with the cockroaches. If we ever get nuked, it's that tough. So when you have a plant that's that resilient, you just don't get rid of it, but maybe you use it in greater moderation in the future and go with some other dogwoods. So it's one to watch. It's definitely on the watch list. I'm not losing sleep over it, but I just wanted to make the point, as I have hopefully on a couple of other plants, that it's just not our non-native plants that can become problem children. It's also good old American plant materials, particularly when used improperly or put outside their comfort zone or other factors where they can, without a little bit of foresight, they can get out of hand before you choose to cite them in your landscape. So I alluded to this earlier, should only be used in moderation and cultivating areas not likely to be disturbed. When upon being disturbed, they will go ahead and sucker and they will form thickets. Again, thickets themselves are not invasive in the strict sense of a word. In the word, they're not displacing native flora. They're not displacing native fauna. They're not really causing economic damage, but they nevertheless are a problem that people then have to deal with. So, again, it gets back to alternative genera, be those alternative plants, Cornus or some type of other genus. So those are three thoughts on plants that I'm watching where I work and live. And just to give you a taste of other plants, and if you were to Google, there's a lot more plants than I realized, only because I had never really seen them myself be a problem in Oklahoma or the other places I travel. But I just picked out a few that are a little bit more germane to my world. And so some of the clematis on occasion can start to spread by seed for sure. Inland sea oats, I will say I have watched Chasmanthium be somewhat of a problem child. Is it truly invasive by that earlier definition of displacing native flora, displacing native fauna, causing economic damage? No, not in my opinion, at least in my part of the world. But the fact that there's a lot of other people, and credible people, these are not people that were pulling off the streets, these are plants people like us, they're saying they are seeing it starting to creep and take over areas. So I think it's one that we have to watch, particularly because, at least in south central United States, it's a staple landscape plant material, and for good reason. It's very easy to grow, handles a lot of climatic extremes, and so there's a reason why we have so many inland sea oats. Perhaps that in itself is a problem. We're growing monocultures, which could lead to issues down the road. Black cherry, if I were to have a map of Oklahoma, this is over in the eastern part of our state. And while black cherry is beautiful and it's a host to different pollinators and such, it too will, when disturbed, will start to sucker and spread out with kind of like rhizomatous or almost stoloniferous growth. And certainly, and more importantly, the birds will spread black cherry all over, you know, the earth. So black cherry, while it's a valuable tree for a lot of reasons, and I still want to hold on to it for ornamental reasons, I think it's one that we have to watch. Yaupon holly, and this is not the only ilex, if you were to Google, that's starting to be looked at here in the United States, but yaupon's one that I'm around, you know, 8 days a week. And of course, the dwarfs are not a problem, but some of the bigger ones definitely set fruit. The females do. And that's something that needs to be on our watch list. Now, clearly, we could go to male yaupon hollies, but as you know, one of the main selling points for yaupons are those beautiful red, sometimes yellow or orange fruits. So it's almost counterproductive in my mind to throw in the towel and say, okay, we're just going to do less fruiting or totally fruitless yaupons. I think there's got to be happy medium that we can reach. But again, from my experience at this point, it's certainly not being meeting that definition that I mentioned earlier. It's just one that's starting to spread more than it did in the past. Phalaris is another one that we're watching, and the list just goes on and on. So I just basically wanted to kick this off, not knowing some of the people's background in the room, and then more importantly, who you go out and talk to and influence after this. Just remind people, and if they're skeptical, to get on the literature. There's a lot of work that's been shown that absolutely some of the sins are committed right in this country with our native plant materials. It's not all about beating up the Asians and some of these other internationals and their fabulous plants that I will, you know, grow till the day I can't, because I love international plants. But we certainly have to bear some of the blame and some of the guilt and some of the problems by our lack of management and some other factors here in the U.S. So I've given you a taste of that. And at this point, I'm going to go ahead and shut this down and just have about actually 1 minute if you have any thoughts or comments on this. I guess I should have said this. I forgot this. Again, just to reiterate, although native plants become invasive, especially when subjected to disturbances, I want to say there's still a fraction of the risk of non-native species. So when you come visit me, even after having this lecture today, the bottom line is,
I'm going to be apologizing for the stockade of Chinese pistache when you come into town. I'm going to be embarrassed about the calorie pear when you come to Stillwater, or the privet. I'm really not going to have to apologize for Chasmanthi and some of these others. So please, when you go away, understand that I'm just talking about plants that perhaps could become worse and worse over time. Right now, they're really in a gray area. We don't know where they're going, but we know they're getting more successful for whatever reason, the reasons that they have in the past. So I wanted to make that clear. And lastly, I'm sorry about this. I forgot this. Male selection, sterile cultivars. This is going to be covered further today. Selections to set less fruit will enable us to find that compromise or that happy medium that I was alluding to earlier. One of the things that really frustrates me in this working group, now we call it professional interest group, I've got to get in the habit of saying that, is that we can't even decide upon the definition of invasive, and that's something we need to talk about. And I'm talking about, again, professional people, not people off the streets, but horticulturists like we all are, plant ecologists and some of these other people. So we're still splitting hairs and fighting over some of the basic definitions. And then lastly, my goal, because I work 100% of the time with industry, is just greater communication between industry and academia is warranted. I know some of my growers, when they read some of these papers saying, hey, you're dissing some of our meat and potato plants, I said, I'm not. I'm just simply mentioning that they are becoming more and more successful growing out of bounds. But I'm the last one to say to get rid of them. At the very least, we'll find, again, those compromises that I alluded to earlier.